You're listening to The Training Dummies. With Rob.
Think of it, an all-shaman expansion to World of Warcraft.
And Daryl.
We'll call it ShamWow. The thing, it sells itself.
Greetings and welcome to episode 207 of The Training Dummies, recorded on May 10th, 2018. My name is Daryl, and yes, I recycled that intro from the last time our guest was with us. Reason being is that we were spending our time trying to get the stream all set up, so I didn't have all that time to go looking for an appropriate clip, but that clip works because we're going to be talking expansion tonight. But as always, before we get to that, I've got my co-host with me, Rob. How are you doing this evening?
Doing good, man. I'm doing great. Actually, it's been a super long day, but I feel good about this because we finally have the stream set up all proper. And
I know, I can see you now.
Yeah. I know, yeah. Yep, no more hiding out. But yeah, it's good.
All right, well then, let's get to our guest then. As I mentioned, we had him on before. It was our Shaman Lore episode, and if you listen to other great lore podcasts like I do all the time, you'll recognize his voice from Lore Watch. Let's give a big Training Dummies welcome to Joe Perez.
Hey. Thanks for having me on again, guys.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for saying yes. I guess we weren't that terrible the first time. We didn't scare you off, huh?
Oh, no. I love you guys.
We love you, too. I don't think there's a whole lot of people out there who don't know who you are. And we've kind of done the quick and dirty, but if you want to give just a real little highlight on what you're up to and what you're doing now, and before we get into the meat.
Fantastic. Yeah. So, some folks know me when I started many, many years ago on the WoW fan site that will no longer be named because of certain companies. Yeah. But we've been reborn as Blizzard Watch, which is a much friendlier name and a much better group of people as far as like management goes. And I now participate in the Lore Watch podcast, which actually started as a fever dream between me and Anne. And then of course there's no way in heckfire that we weren't going to bring Rossi along with us. Yeah. Because, you know, you have to. But then doing that, I also do For the Lore, which is a podcast about story driven video games and tabletop role playing as well. Now, we do live, well, we don't do live shows, but we do like recordings of like role playing sessions for people to consume as well, which is always a good time. And then the other thing that I've been doing recently is I, with a local group of gamers here in Buffalo, New York, called the Good Job Gaming Crew. On Good Job channel on Twitch, we are streaming for charity, and we're doing this 4 nights a week. Every proceed from every sub donation, everything goes right back to Extra Life. And we decided that, you know, it's something we do every year. We love it so much that we just wanted to do it all year round. And so we have a whole team of us that stream at odd hours, like tomorrow, or at least at the time of this recording, Friday nights are my time between 10:30 p.m. Eastern and midnight. So people can always check out and come in and sit and talk with me while I play video games and things like that. So
that's awesome, man.
Yeah, that's cool.
Super cool. Man, I dig that a lot. And you said that's Friday nights?
It's Friday nights. Yep.
Okay.
Right now, it's we have one guy going Mondays between 9 p.m. Eastern, Tuesdays at noon Eastern, because we got to get that daytime work time break in there. Right now, actually, somebody is streaming currently Thursdays at 11 p.m., and then I got the Friday slot.
Awesome. Right on.
So it's like radio shows, eh?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's actually really cool.
We all have our distinct games that we play. We all have our distinct music we listen to. It's fun. You get a lot of variety.
I love that. I love that that you're doing some good things over there.
Thank you.
Well, Daryl, do you have any other top of the show business?
No, I don't think so. We can jump right into this. And this is a good one. This is a good one.
This is Major Death from. I did it. No, I kept thinking about don't screw up, don't screw up. This is Major Death from Hearthstone streamer from twitch.tv/Major Death, and you're listening to Training Dummies, Rob and Daryl.
So if you ever mess up, we will use it. Absolutely, 100%. If you have any questions or comments, want to find out what we're doing, we are active on Twitter. The show is at Training Dummies. I am at Rob Copeland, and Daryl is at Daryl_TTD. And if you like the show and want to support us, you should please check out our Patreon over at patreon.com/trainingdummies. Absolutely no obligations. We're just happy that you listen. So
wait, tonight, what do you mean there's lore in this game? You guys actually paid someone to write a story about Raynor meeting Diablo?
We should swap stories sometime.
My story mirrors that of all orcs. A tale of savagery and redemption. Perhaps one day I shall tell it to you.
Clearly you haven't heard my story.
Oh, yes. I have many, many stories to tell. Would you like to hear one? $9.95 per minute.
That's awesome. I forgot you were going to do that. Okay, one of my favorite parts about this show is some of the little nuggets that Daryl comes up with for this stuff. It cracks me up every single time.
Heroes of the Storm is like the biggest gold mine ever for this stuff.
Yeah, their voice line repository that we found has been the heartbeat of some of this stuff for a while.
Totally.
So what we like to do, throughout a Warcraft expansion is to visit some of the story aspects, because a lot of folks click through that quest text. They don't read it. Once you go through it once, right? Once you go through it once, and you play through one or two or 10 or 12 alts, and you kind of forget how cool it is because, you saw the cutscene already, so you skip it and everything. Well, you kind of forget Jab's guilty too. You kind of forget that throughout, the course of an expansion, which is often a year, 2 years, that some of this story is just freaking amazing. So what we want to do tonight is a little bit of a recap on the Legion story, knowing that Battle for Azeroth is right around the corner. So, We had Joe here on when we did our Stay Classy Shaman episode, and that one got such amazing feedback. We had such a great time just talking with him about that we thought that he would be a super awesome resource to come back and give us the Legion recap. So I guess we start kind of at the beginning, right? We in doing our Stay Classy series, we learned that as unique as a lot of the individual class stories were, there was just like the same thread ran through all of them. You know, the Light's Hope thing or Light's Heart, what the annoying thing that you had to.
Yeah. Yes,
there's a lot of that. So I don't know, man. But do you want to just kind of kick us off at the beginning, and Daryl and I can interrupt you with questions or obvious stuff or whatever here and there.
Well, the first thing that we had to do is we have to actually start before the beginning. So you actually have to go back to Warlords of Draenor because love or hate that expansion.
I don't have to go back.
We do for this one little part. Okay. This one little part. The crux of everything that happened there, you can throw everything else away, but the more important part is Gul'dan 2.0. And Gul'dan 2.0 at the end of Warlords of Draenor is sucked into the Nether and then spit back out on Azeroth, and which sets up the entirety of essentially what's happening in Legion. So the idea is that you need Gul'dan, they need Gul'dan, in order to kick off the largest demonic invasion that has ever happened since the original War of the Ancients, which is kind of big. We never understand exactly why it needs to be Gul'dan, but for whatever reason, it has to be Gul'dan. So he gets sucked into the Nether, spit out on the Broken Shore, and he goes to the Tomb of Sargeras, and that's where we start. That little bit at the beginning, that's really important, because everything for the very beginning portion of Legion centers around Gul'dan and chasing him and all the damage he causes.
You kind of forget that after, your 175th time through Hellfire Citadel, that like what happened in there at the end, that Gul'dan actually did get away. So yeah, that's pretty key.
Yeah. And so once that happens, he winds up getting to the Tomb of Sargeras, and we have some audio dramas with, I love to call him Dadgar. So I'm sorry. I know his name is Khadgar, but I will constantly call him Dadgar.
Dadgar works.
So you have Dadgar chasing him. You have interactions with some classic lore figures like Man of Shadowsong. And you have these items where you see that there's a lot more going on in Gul'dan's head than I'm just serving the Legion, which you kind of have to expect at this point. He's looking for a way out. He's looking for a way to weasel out. He's looking for power. Okay, that'll play later on. But he does manage to successfully get in there and cause enough of a havoc to actually open up the largest demonic portal that Azeroth has seen since the War of the Ancients. And on the Broken Shore, on this long forgotten island or chain section of landmass, all these demons start pouring into the world. Now they're mainly centered around this set of islands, but you have the lead up event where they're hitting all the other areas inside of Azeroth, which was actually really, really kind of cool, where you have Legion commanders and generals sort of hitting all the areas. And the fact that the items repeated themselves made sense lore-wise, because when a demon dies, they go back somewhere and are reborn after being tortured and sent back into the fray, because Kil'jaeden and team, well, they don't care about demonic souls. They're just tools. So Broken Shore, as it's happening, the Alliance and the Horde are like, okay, look, we got to get together. This is too massive of a thing for us to fight with each other. And you have the opening cinematic, which is probably one of the greatest sequences I think Taron Gregory and his team have ever put together. So big shout outs to you guys out there.
Mm-hmm.
You have the scene where you have Varian and Sylvanas on skyships just looking at each other as they're riding into battle. And it is one of the most epic scenes because they just nod at each other. Right? It's just like this. Yeah, it's like, okay, I hate
you. Awesome.
It's like, I hate you. Yeah, but you're okay. You're powerful. Let's go take care of this. Then we can fight later. So, and I think that's one of the more important items there, right? So, questions about that before I go into...
That was kind of a key thing, like the fact that like they were able to put their differences aside and go, okay, like this is some crazy stuff going on, and we need to address this. So I'll hate you later, I guess.
Now everything on the Broken Shore culminates in two iconic events. That one I feel is very, very painful, and the other one is a heroic set of deeds. Right. So you have the death of Varian Wrynn. Varian, who is a character that's been around and talked about since Vanilla WoW, since Warcraft 3, there's been mention of the Lost King, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have the scene where he's attempting to, you know, fight against Gul'dan with his people, and he sells his life in order to allow Jen Greymane and them to survive, right, to get his people out of there. But it's this moment where you don't feel too bad about it, like it's a sad event, but it's almost a perfect end for him in the story, because he's had this complicated life. He's had a split personality. If you follow the comics at all, he was two people at one time. Like, I mean, dude's got some problems. He had this big redemption arc. He winds up winning the love of his son back, brings back all of the Alliance into a cohesive force where they were splintered and falling apart. And he dies doing the one thing that he needed to do, which was preserving that Alliance. Now, the other side of that coin, you have the Horde fighting on that ridges as well, trying to cover the Alliance as they're moving into try to basically take Gul'dan.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the entire fighting, you have Vol'jin, one of my favorite characters, who gets stabbed. He gets stabbed by a Legion blade, and there is no cure for it. There is nothing they can do. And in his incredibly short tenure as War Chief, in which he has not done a whole lot of anything,
too short,
he is taken from us. But it sets up Sylvanas to put her in control as the new War Chief, which is a very important thing, a very important piece of story that goes through the leveling experience and informs a lot of the other things that happen later on. Okay.
What do you think that the whole Vol'jin thing was? Like, did we get ripped off with that? Like, it seemed like he was in office for like a couple of weeks, and like.
So the problem with that is that question I can't answer without spoilers into the next expansion.
Okay, because I'm thinking more in terms of like the story, even from Mists of Pandaria.
Sure.
And you know, like everything that happened there, and the Dagger in the Dark, and you know, all those things, and like it just seemed like this huge, like you're expecting something awesome, and then like. Then he dies. And you're like, oh, okay.
I feel that we were robbed a little bit of him doing some very awesome things and being really like a war chief to try to unite the Horde. Because one of the things that Vol'jin would have been great for is what Thrall originally was meant to be and kind of got out of hand before he got uber powerful. he was a uniting factor. He was the voice of reason. Right. He was able to keep cooler heads, right? And that's what Vol'jin was as well. He was able to talk to anybody. Like, even you go back to Warlords of Draenor, go back to Mists of Pandaria before the fall of Garrosh into insanity, he was able to deal with Garrosh. He was able to understand the situation, read his moods, and go from there. Right. He was a perfect diplomat, a warrior, just like Varian. Varian was a great diplomat warrior. He was a perfect counterbalance. And I think that I would have loved to have seen more of him going into Legion, but I can understand why they did what they did.
Yeah, I guess it was nice to see somebody like Vol'jin that wasn't just like bloodlust all the time. You know, there was a diplomatic side to it. But
so now we go into the part where, having been defeated at the Broken Shore, the Alliance and the Horde retreat, and they have to come up with a plan. How are we going to stop this? How are we going to combat what's going on? So then comes this whole thing where, well, you know, there's these things called the Pillars of Creation, right? They're Titan relics, which are used to shape the world. And if we find them, we could probably shut things down. They're definitely powerful enough. We got to go get them. Okay. So we go on these big missions to go find them in all these zones. And it's actually really important here, because this major story feeds into the story of every single one of the zones and then carries on throughout the entire expansion. It's one of the first times that Blizzard has actively done this. So from a story perspective, really, really great about, happy about that. So you have the Aegis of Agrimmar, you have the Tide Soul of Golgoneth, the Eye of Amon-Thul, the Hammer of Khazgarath, and then, interestingly enough, something that's counted as a Titan relic, and we've speculated on before, is the Tears of Illuin. So we don't really know exactly where it came from, aside from it was from Illuin, but she's never really counted as anything of a Titan or a child of the Titan, but it's interesting that it's that powerful, it's on that same level. So I guess we'll start talking about the Tears of Illuin first, because that directly ties in with the first major content release, which was the Emerald Nightmare.
Right.
Sounds good.
Okay. So the Tears of Illuin is an item that was actually kept inside of the Temple of Illuin inside of Val Shirah. It was stolen, corrupted by Xavius, which, you know, he can't get enough of him because apparently we can't kill him, and his Satyr armies, as they are assaulting Val Shirah. And actually starting up another, or I shouldn't say started up, but bleeding out of the infection of the Emerald Nightmare. Xavius then takes that tear and uses it to do one very unspeakable act, which is corrupt Ysera, one of the greatest of the Dragonflights, and turn her into a minion of the Nightmare, in which players are then have to make a choice. They can either continue to go after Xavius right then and there, and try to get, you know, save Malfurion in his, you know, wonderful, wonderful druid cosplay. Or they could go after the Tear of Illuin. And you think I'm joking. If you look at the model for Malfurion, those aren't feathers grown out of him. He's got them buckled on.
Yeah.
He's actually cosplaying.
Yeah, there's some funky stuff going on there. Yeah.
All right.
So the players, we decide to do the right thing. We go back and we try to clear the temple, and we wind up killing Ysera. Ysera is then redeemed through what is essentially another Tear of Illuin, as the moon comes in one of the greatest scenes of death I think in the game has had in a long time. Her spirit is then flown into the air to be united with wherever she is going to go, which we find out later is back to the Emerald Dream. And the tear is given to us purified. At this point, we as players, as heroes of Azeroth, it's time for us to go kick Xavius's butt. And so we go into the Emerald Nightmare, which is this massive corruption of not just what we know of the Emerald Dream, but it's, we go in and we see exactly how much damage has been done. Mm-hmm. Ancients have fallen. So you have Cenarius Cenarius was corrupted at one point. You have Ursoc, who was, you know, sitting there in his wonderful, wonderful corrupted form. And we as players have to go through and clear every single one of these areas. As we're doing this, we find that the Emerald Nightmare is something that was caused by old gods. Old gods have infected and have been corrupting this, and that's who Xavius' patrons have been the entire time. Up until this point, players in-game haven't really been told that Xavius was an old god sort of crony. We sort of thought he worked for Queen Azara, which is a whole other thing.
Right, yeah.
But then we find out that, well, it's all Gotti. There's tentacles. We're going to have to go deal with it. So players spend that time going through and cleansing the Emerald Nightmare and turning it back into the Emerald Dream. That's that raid release. Now, at the end of that raid release, something important happens that is a thread that they leave behind intentionally. All of the Nightmare is defeated, and Xavius is basically shredded into nothingness. But a tiny little rift is still left behind. And if you've ever done this raid and you haven't done this, go back and do this now. Go to the end, do just this fight. You can do it on LFR. But when the fight's over, there is a spirit of Ysera. She comes down in her elven form, and she leads you to a cave. In that cave, you see the last seed of the old god corruption, that link of how they got into sort of the Nightmare to begin with, where they found their breach, and it's in the hollow under a tree. It's sort of important for future things going on. So it's definitely something interesting and important to note.
Okay, I thought it was just I think I remember from when we did this is that if you follow Ysera and you go where she takes you, you can get like a rare battle pet or something. I didn't know there was some other something to do with the old gods. Oh yeah,
those pets are in that area. They're all
because I remember us talking about that in Ray. I'm like, oh, that's the only reason. So I never did because like, well, I don't pet battle, so I'm not going to go follow her because I don't want the battle pet, right?
But it's one of those weird moments too, and I highly recommend, even though I'm telling you about it, go and see it for yourself because it's this wonderful silent motion because she doesn't talk. There's no voice acting for it. It's literally just this ghostly appearance of Ysera. She stands before the players. She waits to get your attention too, like right there, right where everybody is. Mm-hmm. And then she slowly turns and walks away and she leads you to this little hollow and you see it. It looks very similar to like what the Warlock portal animation is, very much a link to the void. And she just points to it and then, you know, walks away. Like, this is the next thing you need to worry about. Mm-hmm. And it's this heavy foreshadowing. And it definitely comes back later. And it's a cool little moment because you don't get little nuggets like that often in sort of raid content that directly tie to the story, but they definitely do here. So I guess we can then that's the major story beat that Sutter carries over. Then you have all of the events of Nighthold. So once the Emerald Nightmare is clear, we need to start taking the fight back to Gul'dan. We've got one Pillar of Creation, or at this point, a few of them, and we need to start making our way towards him. And the reason for that is because one of those other Pillars of Creation. Is in the Nighthold. It's in this lost, forgotten city of elves that we need to go get. And that's the Eye of Amon-Thul, the Allfather, the most powerful of all of the Titans. Mm-hmm. And we don't know exactly what the deal with it is, but we have to go get it. And the interesting thing here is that the entire Nighthold Suramar storyline is very well constructed because it's a savior arc. And you as the player, in order to get into the Nighthold, you have to free an oppressed people from a tyrant. So the queen of the Night Elves has decided, I'm going to throw my lot in with Gul'dan for survival. This is the best thing for my people. She doesn't realize exactly how far she's fallen. She thinks she's doing the right thing, et cetera, et cetera. We as players start in sort of like the small, almost like sewer type infiltration where we are getting citizens out. We are trying to pull them in. And the interesting thing with Nighthold is it ties directly into the Suramar daily quests and how the entirety of Suramar sort of evolves, where we're gathering people, smuggling them out of the city, freeing them from these legion oppressors that are literally walking them around the city in chains. And it's sort of like this real powerful moment as you go deeper and deeper and deeper through it until eventually you get to the point where it's time to go into Nighthold, the center of the Nightborn society, essentially where their castle is, and it's time to storm that castle. And that's honestly one of the last times we see it's the final stand with Gul'dan, right? He's going after this item. We fight our way through all of the corrupted Night Elves Nightborn that we can get to. We free as much as we can. We take as much of the city back as we can. And we get to this point where we see, well, here's Gul'dan, and we never knew what he was trying to do. Well, we find out that he's trying to use the Eye of Amon-Thul, this giant thing that is actually the center of the spire of the Nighthold, to essentially infuse the body of one Illidan Stormrage, whose body has been stolen earlier by Gul'dan from the Wardens from his little crystal prison, trying to infuse it with a soul or piece of, I believe it was Sargeras at this point. Mm-hmm. And because Sargeras doesn't have a vessel, he doesn't have a body anymore. And it's one of those weird things where we defeat Gul'dan and free Illidan from this scenario by essentially slamming Illidan's soul back into his body. And it's such a weird, surreal moment, but it's like this sort of apex moment of, okay, well, we just brought back one of the biggest lore icons of the last, like, 20 right. years of this franchise. It was one of those really, really, really cool moments.
So before we went into there, though, there was, what is it, the Trial of Valor? Was that the raid? Now, does that have much to do with the main storyline, or is that just kind of a subplot?
So the Trial of Valor, it's more setup, is the best way that I can put it, because we learn more about what's going on with Odin. Not a whole lot, but just enough, because Odin, up at this point, is quote-unquote trapped. He's a Titanic Watcher. He's trapped in his area by Helia by a powerful spell, and the idea is that if we're powerful enough, we can break him free.
Okay.
Well, Helia is not necessarily concerned with the Legion, and I think it's more set up for the next expansion, personally.
Okay.
But as we go defeat her and free Odin, well, he's not really that grateful, honestly. He's kind of a jerk about it.
Mm. With his big lava nutsack beard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's one of those... It's one of those weird, weird moments where, like, it's important later, and it's only important in so much as we sort of need Odin's intervention to get the Aegis of Aghrimmar, which is an item that we need. It's a pillar of creation. So that's really about his importance to the current Legion story arc, okay, and that's sort of where it ends.
All right.
Because he doesn't really care about the Legion, like, if any of his interactions. He's more concerned with his own well-being. So now, after all of that said and done, the next step we go to is the Tomb of Sargeras. We have to shut the Legion portal down. And so from there, we take back the Broken Shore. We fight all of that back. We regain all of the strength that we can there and actually fight the tide back to the Legion's, essentially their doorstep here on mm-hmm. Azeroth. Mm-hmm. We take each of the Pillars of Creation, and we go to, one is the Cathedral of Night, which is a 5-man dungeon in which we take the Aegis of Aghrimmar and use it to sort of start the sequence of shutting down this portal by activating the sort of what was left behind of the Tomb of Sargeras. And here's where we find out that the Tomb of Sargeras isn't actually a tomb. It's an old Night Elf temple. And it's not just a Night Elf temple, it's a Titan facility. And it has been all of this time. So when Aegwynn locked up the avatar of Sargeras all of those years ago and called it the Tomb of Sargeras, mm-hmm. Really what she did is she was shoving basically a corrupted Titan's shell into a Titan facility in order to imprison it, like the Titans had done with all of the old god stuff before.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
It's a really interesting parallel moment. So as we make our way through the Tomb of Sargeras, all of these different areas of the temple, we place the Pillars of Creation. Each one acts as an activation stone to sort of get the defenses back online. And all of it culminates with us finally defeating the Avatar of Sargeras, which is a huge moment because it's a callback to before Aegwynn, or before Medivh was even born, when Aegwynn was still the guardian of Trisfall. And you as a player get to step into those shoes and sort of take that down. And after that's all said and done, and you defeat that shell of Sargeras one last time, you then have the face down kill Jaden on an epic trans-fell flight, which is one of those weird moments where it's like the sci-fi and fantasy sort of meld together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting moment, too, because the last time we had seen kill Jaden was in the Burning Crusade, when he tried to enter our world through another portal, through the Sunwell. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't forgotten that. He's just a little bit smaller this time. So we go through, we defeat him, but not before the damage is done. Because as we defeat him, we see Argus. That's where he was fleeing to try to get back home. We do defeat him, and then there's this moment where Illidan, it's basically everybody goes, Illidan, no, and Illidan goes, oh yeah, Illidan, yes. uses the Sargeite Keystone and his spell to open up a rift in time and space to actually create almost like a tunnel between Argus and Azeroth. And this is his long-term plan all along. He wanted to get to Argus. This is what happened in the entire sequence in the Illidan novel, where it's like, I set this anchor. I know what's going on. I need to get here, and I'm going to take this out. Oh, heroes, you're okay. Come with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get that whole sequence where it's sort of one of those weird moments where I think my jaw dropped when I saw like Argus sort of materialize in front of Azeroth. And it was such a cool moment because in the game, anywhere you go in the game, you can see Argus. And it's a great moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you have...
Yeah, I heard some people kind of fussing about that, but I thought it was pretty awesome. And like, it doesn't matter. You're over in the Barrens. You're over in, you know, in Old War or Oldham, or, you know, you can still see it. No, mm-hmm. That was like, it just made it very, very ominous to say, like, we're coming for you kind of thing, you know?
Well, and I thought it was also an important moment for players to actually see an impact of what was going on in the world. And that's one of the things that Legion did very, very well so far, mm-hmm. is that every major piece of story that we completed, the world shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And it made, for the first time ever, completing the story and doing things as a player had an impact that actually transformed the world. And that was very, very important, at least as far as this goes. Now, after we create that tunnel, obviously we have to go to Argus because, well, we got to take the fight to the Legion, which is really, really cool because as player characters, and this is a real interesting story twist, we've always been very reactive. It doesn't matter what faction you play.
Yeah,
it's always been reactive.
Right.
We're now being proactive. We go, we find the Army of the Light. We go, we find that there are survivors on Argus from the original Draenei people, that the original Eredar, before they became demons. Some of them stayed behind,
mm-hmm.
and they became broken, which is story-wise really, really interesting because we thought that broken were created purely by just being cut off from the light.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case because the light is definitely here. We can still call the light mm-hmm. on this planet.
Right.
So is it proximity to void? Is it proximity to fell, which is an abundance here? We mm-hmm. still don't know, but it's one of those very cool moments where it's like everything I thought I knew about this race is wrong. And here's why. So then we have to help them sort of gather their forces and sort of fight back against the Legion. We're basically joining the Freedom Fighters at this point. And this is where we get to the lovely, lovely part of Zara, who I don't know what they were thinking with this. It was very uncomfortable.
That was weird.
Yeah, that was weird.
Like, up to this point, like, you get all these snippets of where Zara's trying to teach you that Illidan's not bad. He was just doing what he had to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then she tries to force herself on Illidan and, like, convert him into an Army of the Light person, which was really, really uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then he shatters her, which made me very, very happy.
Yeah, after that, I was kind of like, good for you, man.
Yeah.
No means no, even if you're a demon hunter. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. But all of this is to lead up to taking back all of the different pieces that we need to essentially get into Antorus, the Burning Throne, which is where the center of Legion power is. And so we see different various parts of the planet, which I think is really, really interesting because we go to the seat of the Triumvirate, which is where Velen, you know, that's where he ruled from. Mm-hmm. And you see that it's completely shattered and steeped in void, which is really, really interesting because the entire point of the Burning Legion being a thing is because Sargeras lost his mind because he didn't know how to fight against the void and the old gods and the void lords. He didn't know. He saw planets corrupted, lost his brain, mm-hmm. went haywire, started murdering planets, and decided the only way that I could fix the universe is to reset everything in fire. And yet, on his home base, on the planet where he is supposed to have the most concentrated power, there is a huge incursion of void. And I find that absolutely interesting.
Oh, I never thought of that before.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay.
So how did he let that happen? Even if he was focused on Azeroth, his generals are there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think, personally, that this has to do with his the Dreadlords, essentially. Using them as his most trusted lieutenants. Because who did the Dreadlords serve? They serve the void.
Yeah, I was gonna say they don't serve the Legion necessarily.
They're not loyal to the Legion. He basically threatens them with extinction if they don't work for him. But we know from years of in-game story with them, from what happened in Undercity, with everything that happened with the Scarlet Crusade, that these are devious creatures, mm-hmm. and they are tied to the Void. So the question is, did they orchestrate all of that? Did they manipulate it so that at the very core of the Legion's power, where they arguably are the most powerful or in charge of the most things, did they orchestrate it so that the Void had a link there? That eventually when the Void wanted, which is going to be important here as well, it could corrupt another Titan. Because at this point we learn Argus has a world soul.
Yeah.
Argus is a Titan. Whether it's been constructed by Sargeras, whether it was always there, in-game we learn that that's a thing. So it's interesting that the Void would be that close and that much like the shell of the planet, what's supposed to protect the nascent Titan soul before it's born, is so steeped in Void. And I thought that was a really cool reveal.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess I wasn't really thinking of it that way, but it's kind of cool when you see the bigger picture.
Yeah. And so then after that, we wind up busting into Antorus, the Burning Throne, which is the seat of all the power. And we start to learn more about what happened, not just to this planet, but to the Titans. Because at this point, players have all made the assumption that all of the Titans have been dead.
Right.
All the stuff that we find in game says that they've been basically killed, that they didn't exist anymore, that Sargeras cut all of them down. Well, it turns out that's not actually 100% true. And as we're fighting our way through Antorus, we find the Coven. And we find that they are torturing the souls of the Titans, trying to bend them to as well. Because at the end of the day, Sargeras needs a pantheon. He needs beings of equal power on his side. And while he's corrupted, he's already brought at least one over to his side. And why can I not think of his name now?
Oh, you just Jesus. Said Coven, and I like
just shuddered,
cursing, and like, oh. Man, yeah.
So,
yeah, straight up triggered, man. That fight can go make me a sandwich.
Well, I am sorry about that for doing so, that. But it's
since you brought it up, though, I want to ask a question about
Agrimmar. That's right. Agrimmar's
right. But go ahead. Since you brought up Coven, because the abilities, the random abilities that killed us over and over, they are named after the Titans. So that's them using their ability. So the Coven is actually forcing the Titans then to cast that on us.
Oh, yeah, okay. So that's why when you get to the final fight, when you finally get to Argus, that they're so drained, right? It's not that they are just tired because they've been mostly dead for 10,000 years. It's they've been actively tortured, or in the case of Aenar, hunted for that entire time.
Oh man, yeah.
And so when they're using their powers, that's what the Coven does. That's why Agrimmar's corrupted. That's why Agrimmar's working for Sargeras now. It's not because he saw the light, because don't forget Sargeras cut him down. Like we know for a fact that he killed him. And then all of a sudden here he is wielding Tastelac, fighting against us and doing the bidding of Sargeras because and this goes back to the original thing. Sargeras tried to convince the Pantheon that his way was the way. And when they told him no, and tried to fight against him, that's when he murdered them. But they were still his family. They were still who he spent eons ordering the universe with and fighting next to and fighting on behalf of. And so it was this perfect sort of reveal of, yeah, he didn't actually want to kill them. He was just trying to take them and make them see the light. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it happened to be by using the Shivari Coven and making them sort of torture them until they agreed to work with him, which, I mean, it's terrible, but it's story-wise makes perfect sense.
Yeah, this story about it is kind of cool. It's still a terrible fight, though. I'm not going to change my opinion on that. But learning this, like, I had no idea that's what was happening. I think that's really cool. Like,
I guess seeing that same thing, like it, like that they're basically manipulating the Titans, and it makes sense why that fight sucks so much.
Now the cool thing about that fight too, as well, not the fight itself, but the room. Because that fight is awful. but if you look at the four corners, those constellations, those are Titan souls. And when you you fight Agamar, you'll notice that there's a green constellation in the center of the console. Mm-hmm. That's the soul of Argus. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been pointing this out on Twitter for months, and it's one of the coolest things I ever noticed. We've had one of those on Azeroth for a very long time now, since Cataclysm. If you go in Cataclysm, you go down to the elemental plane of Earth and look up at the center point, that's where you see a sea of stars. You see a circular soul. Mm-hmm. If you're a shaman, you can go see it whenever you want. And it's one of those cool moments where it's like, we've actually seen like the soul of Azeroth.
Oh, that's
cool. And I never made that realization till I saw the Coven fight.
I still didn't put it together. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That is way cool.
And then after everything is said and done there, we go ahead and we muck everything up. We destroy all the machines. We free all the bad guys that we need to free on our side. We wreak havoc. And there's one last thing to do. So the Pantheon actually has a seat in the middle of the cosmos, which is really, it's just a bunch of chairs floating in space. I guess they wanted to be Thanos or something. I don't know. But they all go there and they summon the soul of Argus, not completely formed because Argus has been tortured and used for this entire time that the Burning Legion has existed in order to forcibly rebirth all of the demons that have died. And so they bring his soul out into a physical form. They rip that unperfected body. And yeah, we have to fight and put him down as the last step between us and bringing Sargeras back to wield. Mostly because the Titans need that last bit of power. They need that power of Argus in order to rip Sargeras back. Because out of all of the Titans, the only one that has been mostly untouched for the entire time that the game has been going on, minus the fight with Aegwynn, has been Sargeras. He's been able to recover and gather his strength and power. And it's also one of those cool moments where as you're in that fight and you turn back and you look at Azeroth, that red cloud, that's Sargeras. And as you defeat Argus, we rip Sargeras out of that cloud. He gets slammed back into the Pantheon seat, which will be his eternal prison. And then we get the last sequence that we'll ever see, which is one of the coolest moments for me in the game, which is Illidan growing up. And he says, you know, I think I'm going to stay here for a while. It's my turn to be the jailer. And I'm okay with that. So
is that the scene that you get after you finish and it sends you back down to Valshara and over to, back to one of the cataclysms?
Yeah. So from there, you do have to, the sequence after that is you do have to deliver a message to Tyrande and Malfurion. And Tyrande, it's the first time the entire expansion, she seems like she has a heart, where she's like, he finally was a hero. And then you have Malfurion, who's like, I don't believe he actually did this. Eh, whatever. Because Malfurion's too busy worrying about his cosplay. But it's
one of those. A lot of work, man. Those feathers aren't cheap, man. That was 200 hours.
That's awesome.
But it's a very cool final note in that character story because love or hate Illidan, he's a very divisive character. And he's had one of the more interesting, more convoluted stories throughout the entirety of the Warcraft history, especially like if you go back from Warcraft 3 on. He's been weird, but it was a final end cap and a very nice little point. And then the last thing that happens when Sargeras is pulled back is he takes his sword and he drives it into Silithus. And we don't know why he's doing this. We, as players, think that he's trying to kill Azeroth. I don't think that's the case. And the reason why is because there's no setup for him to want to kill Azeroth. Azeroth is the most powerful Titan, the last one, the one that has to be rebuilt. Why would he want to kill that which he needs to destroy the void? Now, also there is our buddy C'Thun, who we killed, but yet magically is still active and still corrupting and still has cultists doing his bidding. And, you know, we've known that even through Cataclysm when we were talking with the Twilight Cult. Cho'Gall, that's the master he serves. And he was still talking to C'Thun, so C'Thun's not dead. I think Sargeras knew, and I think he was trying to cut out or excise another old god from the meat of Azeroth to give her a fighting chance. And it's one of those cool moments where, like, you don't realize that until you start going through the post-expansion sort of quest lines, which is, like, going to Silithus,
doing
that little quest chain, finding the journal.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely little touch.
Magnes, doing some okay.
And it leads up to this perfect endpoint where it transitions seamlessly into the next expansion. And I think this is the first time that they've done this successfully from the start to end of an expansion ever.
Yeah.
Like, and the beautiful thing about it is each one of these little things, the Emerald Nightmare, the Nighthold, the Tomb of Sargeras, Argus, all of it are little self-contained episodes inside of a larger story.
Mm-hmm,
and so you can come back and play one of them and have a complete story start to finish inside of there.
Mm-hmm.
But then it just contributes to the rest of the bubble and then moves on. So,
and I think now that you're saying that, you do the Suramar stuff, like, I mean, it's all like, and the Broken Shore thing leading into Tomb and Argus leading into Antorus. It's like very comprehensive and, you know, it, like all this crazy stuff going on that really just ties into that moment. And then, you know, we still have our foot in all those, of course, doing the emissaries and all that stuff. But like, you know, you could not go back to Suramar again because we finished that and we're done there and we've moved on. And you could not go back to the Broken Shore and that would be fine. It's, you know, I like it. I like it a lot. I think it's very thorough and it's, you know, it's a pretty, it's an emotional roller coaster from start to finish. Like, you know, opening up with the Ysera stuff and then, you know, like you said, a lot of these divisive kind of characters, love, like, you know, what happened with Gul'dan and what happened with Illidan. And it's been, I don't know, probably one of the most like, just like easiest for me to be emotionally invested in a Warcraft expansion that I've played, you know, over the last decade. So.
And the cool thing about it too, is that nothing is tidied up 100%, which I think is really important.
Mm-hmm.
We still don't know what's going on with Khadgar. We just still don't know what's going on with the council and everything like that. And it's just a really good moment. It's a good, interesting setup.
Yeah. Yeah. Where do you want to go from here? I know I have a couple of questions. Do you have anything you want to?
I don't have any specific at the moment, but I still think it's really cool that, you know, everything just kind of all culminated in the way it did. Like, it's just this recap, like this tied so many things together. Like, I know we've had this expansion for almost 2 years, but this tied a lot together in my own mind.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I like doing these kind of shows at the end of the expansion. We've done a couple of these now.
Uh-huh.
And this was perfect. So, but.
Well, like you're leveling a mage right now, right? Like,
yeah.
You've leveled some, like, more than one tune through the actual Legion content. Like, you're being honest, are you going to go back and watch all the cutscenes and do all the stuff? Or, you know, at this point, you're like, no, I've seen it. But you forget, like...
Oh, I know.
How much of it, or, you know, like Joe's pointing out a lot of stuff that, like, I never put two and two together. And that's, like...
I know, it's like, I might start... You know? You know, if I do end up doing any of these cutscenes, I'm probably going to watch them now, because now it's like, now I have a frame of reference. Like, oh, this is what he was talking about. Oh, this is so cool. Now I know what's going on.
They started this, I don't know, probably it's been going for probably most every expansion, but like most zones have their own story thread as well. And,
yeah,
you know, some sort of like wrap up cutscene that's like pretty amazing, you know, the Ysera thing in Valshara and Sylvanas and the Lantern in Stormheim and, you know, that whole thing. There's one thing that just seemed like it was supposed to be important. It was supposed to go somewhere and it felt like it never did, but that was Queen Ysera. And like, you know, seeing her, right. Like there's the one point where you're playing through and you get kind of, I don't know, stunlocked, or, you know, you're playing as Ferrandis and you're, you know, running up and she sits there and just like tells you, you know, that you have no idea what's going on and you need to mind your own business. And yeah. So maybe talk about that for a minute.
That's one of those important threads that wasn't tidied up. And the reason why it wasn't tidied up is because this expansion, aptly titled Legion, was all about dealing with the Burning Legion. Mm-hmm. And Ysera, her dealings with the Burning Legion are sort of weird at best. She was the most powerful magic user, mm-hmm. and possibly still is, on the entire face of Azeroth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what led the Legion to her in the first place. And that's why she was going to, quote-unquote, marry Sargeras, I believe it was. And sort of like... That was the whole thing. It was going to make her more powerful from the beginning. And that's why she agreed to it. And that's why she opened up the portal in the first place. And if you go back and you do the time walking dungeon and you do back, go back to the War of the Ancient, that whole Well of Eternity thing, she's not afraid of anything. She's not afraid of you. You don't even fight her. She just walks away from you. And that's when she's an elf. This is before she's made any deals with anybody. And then now you have to take into mind where after everything is said and done, you know, then you have everything that's sort of, you know, her land is falling underwater. Her people are sort of dying and her magic isn't quite enough to fix that. She can't stop it. So what happens? An entity that reaches out to her and says, I'll make you a deal. I'll give you even more power. I'll give you the ability to save your people if you work with us. Takes the deal. More power is always better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Transforms her and her people into the Naga. Turns her into the Naga Queen. And she becomes even more powerful than before at the behest of an old god's touch, right? And the reason I think it's important that we don't deal with the decisive story with her is because everything we've been dealing with, her story is going to be more tied up in old gods than it is Legion. She's not afraid of the Legion. She was never afraid of the Legion. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She probably could have kicked the butt of Kil Jaeden and all of them herself if she wanted to.
Right.
And she just didn't care. She has other things going on. And that's one of the cool things, because like you get that feeling like she kind of wanted the Tide Stone.
Mm-hmm.
If she really wanted it, she would have just taken it. She would have gone and got it herself. But she doesn't. She's just like, this is all part of a long-term plan for her. Something that I think is going to come to bear in the next expansion, because we're going to be dealing with a whole lot more water stuff. And well, that's her kind of her domain. So I'm all about that. I think that they left her in a perfect place to come back and be important later.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's cool.
How about some of the stuff that's like, I don't know if we want to get into too much spoilery stuff. I actually don't mind that stuff, but I know.
I'm being very good about it for listeners and readers.
I know you are.
I don't want to ruin it for them.
Generally, I don't care, but I think now that we're doing some live stuff, I think it, you know, I want to be cool about that. But there's a lot of things I don't know that are super important, you know, like what, like with Odin and I don't know. Like, do you feel like, okay, maybe going into BFA, do you feel like, I don't think anyone's fooled by the way that this is being advertised up front as this being a Horde versus Alliance thing. Like, none of us are really buying that. So do you think that a lot of the, I think like Cinder is saying in the chat room, there's so many little things that, like you're saying, that aren't tidied up that are really, really pointing into the next expansion. Do you think that stuff's important? Do you think, like, this is really an old gods expansion coming up? Or?
Oh, I mean, I've went on record of saying that the minute I saw the title, I was like, oh, it's going to be old gods. And everybody's like, no, we're going to be fighting each other. And I'm like, no, it's not. You're going to see tentacles
in no
time.
It's the battle for Azeroth.
And that's what I said. Yeah. Exactly.
We're not battling each other for Azeroth. It is literally the battle for Azeroth. Like,
yeah. And the interesting thing is, like, these little tiny threads, I don't think it's important necessarily that players go back and see them now, because one of the things that Blizzard has proven with the storytelling in Legion particularly is that they will do callbacks as necessary in a way that brings it back. So you'll be playing through, and this has already happened with me in the beta and alpha, where I'm playing through a quest line and there's a callback. And it's like, oh, yeah. And so if you've gone through the stories of the zones and you've gone through the stories of the raids and you've seen the stuff, even once, the callbacks will trigger that in your brain. They'll bring them back up. So it's not important that you sit there and you don't have to be like me and have a notebook with all these things that you write down while you're playing the game. Mm-hmm. It's going to be just fine for you not to have to, like, you don't have to pay like microscopic attention to it. But the cool thing I think is going to be when you start realizing how many of those threads, and not just from Legion, but from past expansions and stories that have necessarily been dropped, start being picked back up. And it's one of those cool things where I think they're starting to actually understand what they have in the wild, and whoever is in charge of directing the story now, behind the scenes, or whoever's wrangling all of the writers, is doing a fantastic job of saying, no, here's the story points we need to work with here. This makes sense. Let's keep going with it. So
Jab doesn't want trigger memories to include the coven fight. So. You're going to be like,
don't worry, there's no mention of the coven.
They're going to be like, here, replay this fight real quick. And
It was a rough Friday evening. Let's just say that.
Oh, trust me, my guild bashed our head against that one quite a lot.
I think our take at one point, just to sidebar, is that we were like, hey man, once we get it down, I don't ever want to do it again. This is not like I want to come back and do it again. I just want to kill it once and just be done, so then move on. And like, man, we cannot effing get it. I think like 20% ish was about our best attempt, and like, God, that fight is just garbage.
to put it in perspective, the missus, who has her headphones on, isn't really paying attention behind me, heard the word coven and immediately messaged me and said, "Should have needed coven." Oh. Hey.
That's awesome. I'm going to make you shut that off right now if you guys start talking. Yeah, man, I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Daryl, was there any, I know I asked kind of a minute ago, was there any other maybe threads or plot points or anything that...
I don't think so. That just kind of tied everything up neatly.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, just the overall story of the whole expansion that just kind of tied everything up. That was perfect. That's exactly what I was looking
for.
Yeah,
man, that was super kind of concise, to the point. You hit some stuff, man, that I wasn't expecting. I wasn't expecting some of the obvious, like, I don't know, like, I just hadn't, like, thinking, you know, we keep saying coven, but, like, just the stuff going on, even in Antorus, you know, like, you don't realize it when you're not, if you're not really paying attention. But, yeah, that was super awesome, man. Thank you so much.
And like, hey, even, anytime.
What was it, Tomb of Sargeras, you said we were using the...
The pillars.
So I don't recall using them or doing any of that kind of stuff.
Oh, dude, yeah.
And that's
the LFR you had to, yeah.
Well, that's the fun thing is, because like, if you weren't paying attention, like when you get to the final boss of a wing there, mm-hmm. there's an outline where you place the pillar of creation. But if you're not the player doing it, it's mm-hmm. really easy to miss. But if you go back
apparently
and do the
fight, I never did it.
Well, or
yeah,
somebody
there was,
went
there was quests
quickly,
for all that stuff too, yeah. You saw yeah. like a little, it was like a golden silhouette of, you know,
sure.
the Tide Stone or the whatever, the hammer, whatever, you know, like.
I guess yeah. I never but put you, it together.
Okay. Yeah, but you never actually had to do it in order to get quest credit. Like, okay. If anybody in the raid did it, you just got mm-hmm. credit for it. So it's very easy to miss, but it's one of those little things where it's important to the story and it's important to the mm-hmm. story of the Titans. But if you don't care about it, it's not really necessary for you to really interact with it. It's kind of a cool little thing.
Huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Like some of those nuances got lost, yeah, especially totally. Like in LFR and stuff, when somebody would just click it. And next thing you know, you finished that quest and you've moved mm-hmm. on. You had no idea that what you've done is you've used all those, the artifact pieces that you've been collecting, and you've been turning them back over. Or I don't know, man. I had a theory for a little while that we were actually like, we were going out and collecting all these things, right? Collecting all these super sacred, powerful things. And what were we doing? We were like bringing them to kill Jaden, or, you know, mm-hmm. we were basically like hand delivering them at that point. So I don't know. That didn't quite seem to play out as the conspiracy that I thought it was, but.
Yeah, that would have been, it would have been one heck of a betrayal. And I probably would have flown out to Blizzard HQ, found whoever decided to do that, and had a very stern talking about that.
So. Yeah, it is awesome. Oh man, I feel like I want some, like one little spoiler. I love spoilers, man. They're awesome. How about a mild spoiler for BFA? Something like to wet the whistle.
Okay, so this is not it's something that if you've remotely paid attention to their Twitters, even slightly, you've probably have seen. But there is a Titan facility that you will be visiting very early, especially if you are Horde side.
I love the Titan stuff, man. Yeah. It's so good. Yeah.
All right.
Cinder wants to know, do you think we'll get Kul'Tiran Shamans?
Yes, actually. I believe that we are probably at some point going to get that. And the only reason I say that is because one of the things that they've made a very interesting point to do is talk about Kul'Tirans and sort of like their hedge witches, mm-hmm. Which is an old school sort of reference to white witches of nature. They mm-hmm. weren't quite druids, but they were sort of what existed after druidism was stamped out in like European culture, mm-hmm. Which is really, really cool. But they exist in this world. And if you play Alliance and you play on the Alliance side, you wind up interacting with them in both a positive and negative way very, very quickly. So I'm not really going to count that as a spoiler. But when you look at their powers, they can very easily fit both archetypes of a druid, which we've seen a bit of, but also if they decided to, it could be shaman as well. And if they have the same thing where they talk with the spirits, they sort of talk, you know, they kind of commune with nature in a way that's very similar to what shamans do. And I've often argued that the difference between shamans and druids is, well, we shamans, we like our sticks. So,
you know, what's funny is that I, for the longest time, I was like really hyped about the new druid. What the heck? The troll.
Zendalari.
Druids, right?
Zendalari.
Yeah. And not because I wanted to play a druid very bad, but just the dinosaur thing, man. It was just like, it was amazing. And then I saw a couple of videos of the models data mined and they just look super good. And I'm like, yeah. Well, now I've seen the Cold Terran druid models and I was like, holy crap. How is that so much better than like everything else that's going on out there? Like,
I mean, for me, it's because I'm five and I just love dinosaurs. Like I have Dinobots from Transformers sitting like 2 feet to my left here. So
that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's so sweet.
Oh man, I used to love the Dinobots.
Totally.
Love. All right, well, I think we're about, I mean, I could, you know, we could start talking about allied races and a bunch of other stuff, but I think like that was super awesome. So we've kind of come to a good closing point here.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Well, if you haven't already, make sure you come and join the official Training Dummies Discord server at discord.me/TTD. It's the best way to keep in touch and get real-time interaction with us and our community, as well as the awesome guests like Joe that you've heard on the show. That's discord.me/TTD. And since we are streaming shows live now, head on over to twitch.tv/thetrainingdummies and follow so you know when we fire up the stream.
It seems fate has brought us together.
You have my gratitude.
We make a great team.
I'm sure glad you're around.
Well, if it ain't my favorite person.
You have your uses, don't you?
You have quite a talent there.
Together, our victory is assured.
Good enough.
All right, Rob, what do you got for a shout-out?
Oh, man. Definitely Joe for taking some time out of his evening to come and talk lore with us. Absolutely. Everybody in the chat room tonight, this has been awesome. Shamanom for giving us a host and a lot of the chatter going on in there. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for making this transition over to a live stream super, super fun and painless. And once again, Kranos, thank you so much to our official, the tech support, Torin, who helped us kind of iron out some last minute poops that we were having with OBS and all that stuff. So, thank you so much. Daryl, you again for keeping the scheduling train rolling. I really appreciate it, man. What do you got?
Joe, a big shout out to you. Thanks for coming on. This is exactly what I was looking for. You know, a nice succinct recap of the overarching story that was Legion and everything that happened. Like, it was pretty top view that we did, but I missed a lot of this stuff. Like, I didn't put it all together. So this was perfect. This is exactly, I love the story of Warcraft, but I don't pick it up. And I've mentioned this before. I don't pick it up during the game when we play. Like, I've read a lot of the novels. I'm just about done Chronicle 3. And that's the kind of stuff I need, like podcasts like this, like Lorewatch and the books. Because when I'm playing the game, I miss it all. I don't know why. Even when I stop and read the quest, I still miss it. So this is perfect. Thank you very much. Shout out to you, Rob, for you're the one doing all the heavy lifting on the streaming part, getting that OBS figured out. And yeah, we've done it a few nights now and I'm glad it's you doing that part because it seems like it's not very fun. But anyway, so big shout out to you. And yeah, of course, Kranos, he was in chat with us and we were on a call with him for at least half hour before we started talking to Joe, just so we could get everything finalized and set up and ready to go. And we really appreciate it, Joe. This is two Joes. Joe, our tech support guy, and Joe Perez. All right.
You know, what's really funny is because me as a Joe, I'm also a tech support guy. My shout out to tech support Torn Joe.
All right. Do you have any other shout outs this evening?
I would like to say, take a shout out to Shaman Aminam for showing up and kind of being in chat as well, because he's a local friend of mine. He actually lives about 15 minutes away from me.
Sweet.
So big shout out to him. I'd like to also give a shout out to you guys for having a consistently great show, for being great, outstanding members of the community, and for doing some great work. So thank you for that. I want to thank every single one of your viewers for coming out and joining us on the live stream. Big shout out to my Shaman family, especially Cinder. Love you, dear. And I want to give a shout out to my podcast co-hosts over at For the Lore, as well as Lore Watch, and also to my local Good Job crew, because, well, we're awesome. So
nice. Well, before we wrap this up, where can people reach you if they have more questions about this topic or anything else?
So you can definitely reach us at, well, you can reach me at podcast@blizzardwatch.com. I can't remember, but it's on the website. If you go to blizzardwatch.com, you could actually go ahead and find the link to it. Just make sure you put podcast in the subject line if you have anything for Lore Watch that you want to know story-wise. If you want to hit me up on Twitter, you can find me at LoaderZJ, L-O-D-U-R-Z-J. I usually respond to most folks. If I don't, that means that I am probably in a meeting at work and very angry, but we'll get back to you later. And I'm always more than happy to interact with folks. You can also find my podcast, my other podcast over at ForTheLore.com. And you know, feel free to drop us a line anytime.
Awesome. I think that does it for episode 207 of The Training Dummies. You can find this and past episodes of the show over on iTunes, Stitcher, and thetrainingdummies.com. And remember, we are all just jackasses with mics. So until next time.
It's advice you can trust.
Woo-woo!
From people you shouldn't.
Woo-woo!
So forget what I said before. Now is when things are getting weird.
Woo-woo!
Oh, a fan, huh? Oh, well, who can blame you?
Thanks for all the love and support!
At patreon.com/trainingdummies.
Perhaps you require more training.
Dummies.
Uther.
I'm not dignifying that with a response.
Look, there's a little note.
patreon.com/trainingdummies.
Has not been evaluated by the FDA. Please do not operate large machinery or mythical creatures after healing. Side effects may include nausea, dimensional displacement, stomach irritation, and sentient discharges. Always consult a doctor before using
patreon.com/trainingdummies.
Was that not enough jokes? Were you not entertained?